Warning. The following content may contain elements that are not suitable for some audiences. Today's episode has intense discussion regarding suicide. Viewer discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Words to Kill By, the best place to go when word nerds and true crime fans want to hang out and discuss those wordy, nerdy, and murdery things. I managed to rope my amazing co-host back into the recording booth today. Hector was only supposed to be a sometimes co-host, but I think I'll keep him. What do you think?
Yeah, it's good to be here. Hello, everyone.
All right, so I got a question for you.
Okay.
Do you know what an idiolect is?
You're an idiolect. Wait, what did you call me?
No, not quite. Okay, so it's a linguistics thing, right?
Oh,
of course
okay.
It is. So it's kind of like a dialect, but smaller. So a writer named Richard Nordquist defines it as the distinctive speech of an individual, a linguistic pattern regarded as unique among speakers of a person's language or dialect. So what that really means is it's your own words, your own vocabulary, your own personal dialect.
So if I have a dialect, it's my spin on it, like my own idiosyncrasy, if you
yes,
will.
Yes, exactly. Idiosyncrasy, idiolect. But idiolect has to do with your words and not so much, you know what I mean, the weird... It's weird words, not weird actions. How's that?
I got you. Okay. So how I use them and how I phrase it.
Right.
Okay.
And each of these are very individual. So just for giggles, I put out on my Facebook page to I asked people, hey, what are some different sayings or whatnot that you guys have in your family? So here are a couple of ones that have come up. An emery board is a sanding stick. A toilet is a poo pot. Somebody says, what are you during instead of what are you doing? A word for snooping is nibshit. I am personally going to adopt that one. I love that one. Somebody calls teeth zoobies. Like when they were a kid, their mom said, let's go brush your zoobies. And now she uses it with her own kids. Gummy lifesavers are candy donuts. And a pacifier is a pie instead of a passy or a binky or whatever else. And I got tons of these, and I absolutely love them. But everybody and every family has their own idiolect. I mean, in our family, right? We say melkum instead of welcome, right?
Mm-hmm.
We say flog sometimes instead of golf, and that came from your deployment. Mm-hmm. Right. And so you don't use it very often, but you do use it when you're talking with those people who were there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we say spank you or spanks instead of thank you sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
One of my big ones is I always say is I love your face instead of just I love you or love you. I always say I love your face. And it started years and years ago. And I always kind of used it primarily with our kids, our nieces, our nephews, and sometimes close family friends. But what's funny is that other people use it now, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, an idiolect falls under linguistic variation studies. And that is our primary focus for today's case. You ready?
I was born ready. Let's go.
All right. They call them black widows. They are women who kill their husbands, but they are named after the black widow spider, like the real spider. The reason for this is because the black widow spider in the wild often kills her mate after sex. She kind of eats him, actually. Okay? So the reasons that black widow spiders of the human variety kill isn't necessarily after sex or bad sex or even good sex. It's just more because of jealousy or financial and material gain. That's usually why they become a black widow. So Stacy Wallace Caster is really no exception to this. But her deviousness extended way past just killing her male partners. All right. So Castor has committed at least 2 murders and was working on a 3rd when she got tripped up by one very common word in her vocabulary. Just one word.
Wow.
And it's common. So as we go through this, let's see if you can figure out which one of these words and our listeners ended up sending the Black Widow to prison.
All right, let's try it.
Okay. So Stacy Ruth Castor was born July 24th, 1967 in Clay, New York, USA. Since we now have an international audience, I'm going to try to clarify some of these non-native U.S. ideas and concepts. So, Clay, New York. Her parents were Jerry Daniels and Judy Eaton. And according to the 2020 season 41, episode 23, which was called Black Widow, it was February 2019 when this came out, Stacy's mom, Judy, recalls that Stacy was a very curious, very intelligent child. She was always asking why. Her mom said she was sometimes only allowed 3 why questions a day. Oof. That would have sucked for me.
Can you imagine you or your our daughter like that?
No. Wow. We still ask why questions constantly. And then in this same interview, which included Stacy Castor herself, she said, when I was a kid, answers such as because and I said so were not adequate answers. She wanted to know more all the time. So it really isn't all that surprising that she wanted to become a paralegal or a lawyer. And even when she was a senior in high school, she began taking, you know, classes at the community college to kind of get her started on this career path. By all accounts, Stacy's childhood and her adolescence was very normal and very happy even. There wasn't any apparent trauma that, you know, came up in the investigation or even in her own admissions. All right, so the rest of my notes, the rest of our discussion, I got a lot of my information from this same 2020 interview, and I got it from several articles and stuff that I also have listed on our resources page, on the case notes page on our website. So again, thank you to all of those who did a lot of work before me and allowed me to focus on just the language and not having to dig up a whole lot of other stuff. So David Castor and Stacy Wallace lived in and around Syracuse, New York, and they met through Stacy's boss. David was a great guy, outdoorsy, dedicated to his own HVAC company. He owned it. He was very dependable. People just described him as a very genuine, kind person. Stacy was a hardworking single mom whose husband, her first husband, had passed away from a heart attack. She was just kind of starting to re-enter this world of dating because she had grieved for a really long time. So David and Stacy hit it off, and they eventually got married in August of 2003. And, you know, in doing so, they became a blended family. David had one son named David Jr. from his previous marriage, and Stacy had 2 daughters. Though David Jr. was out of the house, Stacy's 2 daughters, Ashley and Bree, still lived at home. You with me so far?
I'm here.
Okay. Ashley and Bree were not really happy about the whole David marrying their mom thing. They didn't want their mom to remarry. Stacy said that her girls didn't want her to get remarried because they didn't want their own father, who had passed away, to be replaced. I think that's pretty common.
Yep.
I mean, but still, there was a lot of tension between the new stepfather and Stacy's daughter. And Ashley, the oldest daughter, also said in the interview that David made it very clear that he did not want to be a father to them, that he already had children, and that it wasn't his job to be their dad.
Ooh, that doesn't make anything any easier, my goodness.
No. But in addition to all of this, even though he didn't want to be a dad, he expected his new stepchildren to do everything he said without question. But this didn't go over very well with Ashley and Bree, as they had apparently inherited their mother's love of asking questions.
Yeah.
And they questioned everything this new guy said to do. So it was a pretty tense household. But even with that, Stacy said that her relationship with David was good and it was solid. And she even said that, quote, David was support and strength and security to me, end quote. That's what she said about her husband. All right, so let's fast forward 2 years. It's now August 2005. David wanted to go on an extensive vacation with just Stacy. He didn't want to take the girls. So Ashley had to work, and Stacy didn't want to leave Bree home alone for the 2 weeks that David was planning for this vacation. I cannot remember exactly, but the girls weren't very old, like maybe early teens.
Okay.
So it wasn't like they could stay by them. They could stay, but 2 weeks is a really long time. So Stacy and David really argued horribly about this trip. It makes kind of sense, right? I mean, depending on who or what, but I don't think that would have gone over well in our household.
That would have absolutely not. Well, one, we wouldn't have 2 weeks without our kids, and that's a little much.
Yeah. I mean, our kids are out of the house now, and 2 weeks is, I mean, that's just the norm. But when they were living with us.
I mean, during that time. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, supposedly, they argued for 7 hours in the garage. And then David just got really angry, and he grabbed a bottle of Southern Comfort and locked himself in the bedroom.
7 hours.
In the garage.
Open. We need a snack.
Snack time. Stacy decided to go to a friend's house to cool off or whatever, but she only decided to leave after making one more attempt to get David to open the door. Mm. But he didn't. And when she got to her friend's house, Stacy told her friend that she had heard David snoring through the door and assumed he was just sleeping off his alcohol. The reality was, David wasn't sleeping it off. According to the police investigation, at that particular time, David was in the process of dying when Stacy left the house.
Oh.
Right. So, let's go back and start at the very, very beginning of Monday, August 22nd, 2005. Okay. All right. So, Stacy Castor called 911. She said she hadn't seen her husband, David, since 5 a.m. the morning prior. Right. So, it's Monday. So, she hadn't seen him since Sunday morning.
Okay.
She told the operator that they'd been arguing, and the operator asked if David had ever mentioned suicide before. Stacy didn't answer directly, but she said that David had told her that if she left him with her daughters, that she would be sorry, that he would make her sorry.
Whoa.
That's what she said to the 911 operator. So police come to investigate. The bedroom door was indeed locked, and an officer busted in the door.
Okay.
So what they found was they really did think, you know, initially it was suicide. David laid sprawled across the bed. He was naked and very much dead at that point. So like 6 a.m. on a Monday morning. On the nightstand next to the bed was a glass of green liquid, a bottle of diet cranberry juice, a bottle of apricot brandy, and then some other odds and ends. Okay. The look on your face is great. You're very confused right now.
Wow. Okay.
And then on the floor, partially under the bed, was a bottle of antifreeze. Okay. So there are pictures of this on our website of the crime scene. So though unusual, suicide by antifreeze is not unheard of. And the detectives, you know, the first officers on scene figured that it was a pretty cut and dry case. On a side note, drinking antifreeze is known to be a really horrific way to die.
Yeah.
It's pretty unusual, as I said earlier, and it's not all that common for guys at all, because they just prefer, when men commit suicide, it's, you know, just the most common method is by a gunshot wound.
Usually a bloody mess.
Right, or hanging. So, but it takes hours to die by antifreeze, and it leaves the person in excruciating pain. And because it's so bad, the person often ends up calling for help before they can actually die. And this is not what happened with David. He actually did die from this, or supposedly, because he killed himself.
Supposedly.
So, dun, dun, dun. Especially the wife. Okay, so since Stacy had already said, you know, her husband was suicidal, the police said, okay, that's probably really what it is. Stacy said that in addition to their argument and the ongoing tension between David and his stepdaughters, David's father had recently passed away as well.
Okay.
And she said that David had a deepening depression that was a constant source of worry for her on top of everything else. And she thinks their argument might have just pushed him over the edge.
Hmm.
So all that is well and good, but David's friends and other family, particularly his son and then his ex-wife, his son's mother, said that this is absolutely not possible. David would never kill himself, no matter what Stacy said.
Hmm.
So it turns out that David's friends and family were right.
Mm-hmm.
While processing the house, which, you know, this happens in some states where there's an unattended death, but just in case that even though it appears to be suicide, it's not actually suicide, they go ahead and process the house and the scene to make sure in case, you know, the body ends up at the autopsy and they say, oh, wait, this was not actually a suicide. It was murder. Absolutely. Then they have a jump on the investigation.
Yep.
So this is what the detectives were doing. One of the detectives, named Detective Dominic Spinelli, notices a turkey baster in the trash can.
Hmm.
Kind of weird. It's August, not Thanksgiving for a turkey baster. He picks it up and he takes a whiff and he smells alcohol in this turkey baster. So then he removes the little plastic bulb from the turkey baster at the bottom and the smell was even more noticeable. But there is something that just wasn't right for Detective Spinelli. So he decides to send the brandy bottle, the glass that had the green liquid, the antifreeze bottle, and the turkey baster in to get tested. The glass had three fingerprints on it, and the way the fingerprints were on it, it was like somebody held the glass in between their thumb and their first and middle finger from the bottom. So think about that. It's not like a normal way to hold a glass if you're going to be drinking alcohol.
No.
Not really. So there are three fingerprints on that glass, and they were all Stacy Castor's,
mm-mm,
not David's. Now, he said she could have put the glass in the cabinet that way. Maybe that's how she put it in the cabinet. Or she could have, you know, put the glass up to David's lips that way. Nobody really knows.
Okay.
But there's plausible deniability in there. The turkey baster had antifreeze as well as alcohol in it.
Hmm.
And David's DNA was on the tip of that turkey baster.
Uh-oh.
Right. So I don't think he was doing apricot brandy antifreeze shots from a turkey baster.
Wow. All right.
Right. I mean, in all your military days, I don't think you took shots from a turkey baster.
I don't believe so.
However, there were no fingerprints on the baster. None.
Wow. Okay.
So that's kind of interesting to me. Did they wipe down the turkey baster for fingerprints and just miss the tip of the baster and that left DNA? I don't know. Regardless, there were no fingerprints, but there was DNA. So now detectives are really suspicious, and they really start to ramp up the investigation. They eventually find David's last will and testament. Not surprising to Stacy, anyways. He left everything to his wife. But what was surprising was that he left an inheritance to his two stepdaughters. Uh-huh. But nothing, not even a physical item like a boat or a watch, was left to his biological son, David Jr.
You and I both know that this doesn't add up.
Not at all.
No.
Well, other people decided the same thing. Like, they said there's just no way.
I mean, that's pretty blatant. Just saying.
Right? So, come to find out that later, much later, that Stacy had forged this will.
No way.
Way. And it would be years, though. It would be years before the police had the evidence to prove it.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So, Stacy buries her husband, who committed suicide, David Castor. She buries him. Guess where she buries him?
No clue.
Right next to her first dead husband, who died of a heart attack.
Wow.
Right next to him.
Let's start stacking them up. Let's do it.
So there's Michael Wallace in his plot.
Okay.
There's a spot for Stacy to go when she passes away. And then on the other side of Stacy is where she buried David Castor. There's a picture on that on the website, too. It's crazy. All right?
Okay.
Yeah. So, she buries her husband again, and she's like, okay, I gotta start all over again. I'm gonna rebuild my whole life. She did receive about $50,000 from life insurance, and she immediately began to renovate the house and have these parties and stuff at her house. Detective Spinelli said that she went through the money pretty quickly. He said, you know, it's not necessarily suspicious. Maybe she was just trying to distract herself from her grief, but he just could not let it go. And again, he said something wasn't right.
Mm-hmm.
So Detective Spinelli starts looking for other leads. And he decides to look up Stacy's first husband.
Okay.
He did not attend the funeral for David Castor or anything. So he's like, let's go talk to her first husband and just see, you know, what kind of person she was. This is Michael Wallace, right? The dad to her two girls. Detective Spinelli didn't know that he had already passed away.
Oh, okay. I'm like,
yeah. No, he didn't
know.
Are
we doing seances? What are we doing? All right.
So when he goes to find Mr. Wallace, mm-hmm. lo and behold, he finds out that, you know, Michael's also dead. And he died in 2000. That's when he discovered that Stacy had buried them next to each other.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So Michael and Stacy's story. Michael Wallace and Stacy Daniels met when she was just 17. They had dated for 3 years before getting married in a very small ceremony held at Stacy's parents' house. Stacy told 2020 that Michael was the love of her life, but he had a dark side. And this was her quote. When Michael was good, he was very, very good. But when Michael was bad, he was very, very bad.
Okay.
She said he had a drug and alcohol problem, but this didn't make her want to leave him. And before long, they started a family. Ashley was born in, golly, I didn't write it down. I think it was like 1998, maybe? 1998 or 1999. And she just really became the light of Stacy's life. You know, a little girl, and she said that Ashley gave her purpose beyond anything that she had ever imagined. And then 3 years later, Bree, her sister Bree, was born. And she became Daddy's little girl.
Mm.
Like, his princess. And a very obvious favorite.
Mm.
So, like detrimentally favoritism.
Okay.
And so it's to the extent that Ashley and her dad supposedly had no real relationship and was very damaging for Ashley.
Absolutely.
So Stacy at this time was an ambulance dispatcher and Michael was a mechanic. Stacy worked the day shift. Michael worked at night as a mechanic.
Okay.
So they worked opposite shifts and they really had very little family time. So here they are trying to raise, you know, small children. They're working opposite shifts. They're not spending any time together. And so, you know, things happen.
Absolutely.
They're not focusing on their relationship. So Michael supposedly had affairs, and his drug and alcohol issues became a bigger and bigger problem. Stacy told friends that she wanted a divorce, but she decided to wait until after the holidays to file. She didn't want to ruin the holidays for her children.
Okay.
But Michael became very sick in December of 1999. Okay, so Stacy couldn't have been born in 98 because he died. Okay, anyways, I don't know when Stacy was born. I'll look it up. So December 1999, Michael became very sick. He couldn't walk. He couldn't talk. Had random vomiting. Incoherent much of the time. Eventually, he passed out on his couch, and the family rushed him to the ER, where doctors said he had a heart attack. He was only 38.
Wow.
But heart attacks aren't unheard of at that age, right? It's They're just not very normal.
Right.
So since the doctors told Stacy that her husband had had a heart attack, she decided to not have an autopsy done.
Hmm.
Right. So Michael dies. She buries him. Upon Michael's death, Stacy receives $55,000. She used that to pay for the unexpected funeral expenses. And then she took her kids to Disney.
Disney?
Mm-hmm. Trying to create, you know, maybe some new or happier memories, you know, whatever. Their dad just died. So after learning all of this, the police are now more and more sure that David Castor's death was not a suicide, but a homicide. As part of their ongoing investigation, they decided to pull Stacy Castor in for an interview about Michael's death. And she told them that Michael had loads of medical issues. And that's probably why he died at such a young age. Okay?
Okay.
However, the police went to go look for Michael's medical records, and they could not find anything in there, in his medical records, that, you know, other than a few cases of shortness of breath and a hernia.
Huh.
There was nothing in there ever that said he had heart problems. So with whatever sixth sense that Detective Spinelli has, he decided he really, really needed to find out if Michael had died of a heart attack, an actual heart attack.
1988.
Okay. For Ashley. Sorry, Ashley Wallace was born in 1988. Okay, so she was about 11 or 12 when her dad died, and that means Bree was 9. And then 2005, she was 16 when her mom married David Castor. All right, thanks. No worries. Going back to that. So Detective Spinelli says, I need to know, did Michael really die of a heart attack? Did he really? So he went to a judge and he asked for Michael's body to be exhumed. He did receive permission from the judge to autopsy Michael Wallace, and this happened in September of 2007.
Okay.
So we're 2 years past when David Castor died. So Detective Spinelli told 2020, quote, as they brought up Michael's coffin, I wondered if he was saying to us, it's about time. Eek, right?
Yeah.
So what do you think they find?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say he died the same way.
The same way as what? The second husband.
Her second husband.
Yeah.
David.
Okay. David. Right. Yeah. So the coroner calls Detective Spinelli and says, hey, guess what? Michael is loaded with antifreeze crystals. Mm. They're all in his organs, what's left of them, all in his body. They don't go away. These crystals do not go away. Yeah. So they're there. He was poisoned and a victim of a homicide, not of a heart attack.
Dun, dun, dun.
Right? So police go out and they talk with Stacy again so they can go ahead and they said, we just really need to talk with you and close out this investigation. They said Stacy was really nervous and really surprised to see the detectives because she thought, you know, everything was over and done with. David is buried. She'd move on with her life. There's nothing going on. But they make an appointment for Stacy to come into the police department for a formal interview. So let me play you a short clip of Detective Spinelli as he's relating an important part of his talk with Stacy Castor. This is, again, part of that 2020 interview. So here you go.
I said, Stacy, there are two glasses sitting on the nightstand. You say that you poured him some cranberry juice at one point, right? She said, yes. I said, I'm going to show you a picture of those two glasses. I asked Stacy, do you remember which glass it was that you poured the cranberry juice in? And she looked at it and said, well, when I poured the antifreeze, and then she stopped and said, I mean the cranberry juice. I'm like,
all right. Did you hear it? Oh, my gosh. Did you hear it?
Oh, my goodness.
So Spinelli said, when I went to pour the antifreeze, I mean the cranberry juice. And so then Detective Spinelli says, he repeats what Stacy said, and Stacy says, you just said antifreeze. And Stacy got even more upset and said that she made a mistake. She didn't mean antifreeze. She meant the cranberry juice, and that the police were trying to trick her and they were framing her for David's death and that she was done. They couldn't do that to her. So she left the department and contacted an attorney.
Whoa.
Yeah. So now they had some serious probable cause and some evidence, right? So police set up wiretaps on her phone. They set up cameras at the cemetery where both of her husbands are buried. And they kept Stacy under constant surveillance. So they see Stacy go out to the cemetery to see for herself that Michael had in fact been exhumed. She had heard rumors, so she went to go check. And then she began to make tons of frantic phone calls. She's trying to get support about how the mean old police are blaming her for David's death and that they have disrupted. They had the gall to go dig up poor Michael when he just had died of a heart attack, and how could they? And she's just telling everybody all this. She even tells Ashley, her oldest daughter, that the police had dug up her daddy. And now Ashley is furious and horrified. So Ashley's, you know, pretty upset, but she becomes even more upset when the police show up to her college to tell her that her father had been murdered with antifreeze and did not die of a heart attack. Because her mom didn't tell her that part.
Wow.
So Ashley calls her mom, and after a lot of disbelief and crying, Stacy tells Ashley to come on over, have a drink, and let's just be together in this hard time. Stacy's 19. She's underage. Ashley is 19 and underage. Stacy had never done this with Ashley before. Like, they'd never just had a drink at the house. So, you know, Ashley's like, well, that's kind of cool. Pretty crappy, but it's a crappy situation, so mom's trying to help me out. So she goes over to her mom's house. Mom gives her a drink in a red plastic cup. She drinks it, and then she eventually passes out in her bed. She gets up the next morning, goes to school with a little hangover, but she's doing okay. Not great, but okay. So Stacy calls Ashley again and says, all right, I'm still struggling. Let's get really drunk this time. And Ashley isn't quite as enthusiastic, but she didn't want to, you know, disappoint her mom. Plus, you know, it's still pretty cool that her mom's letting her drink. She was, you know, just a teenager. So she goes and she has another drink with her mom. And then, again, she goes to her room and passes out. The next morning, Bree, the younger sister, goes into Ashley's room and sees her lying on the bed. Ashley's eyes are wide open, but she's not able to move or speak.
Oh.
Something was wrong.
Absolutely.
So, panicked, Bree wakes up Stacy, and for the second time in 2 years, Stacy calls 911. This time, she says her daughter has taken some pills, and it sounds like something's stuck in her daughter's throat. She's not breathing very well. She also tells Stacy also tells the operator that Ashley had some alcohol, and there were different types of pills lying about Ashley's room that she thinks Ashley took. So while this is going on, while, you know, Stacy's talking to the 911 operator, Bree looks around the room and she finds a letter. She reads it and then she hands it to her mom. And then the mom, Stacy, just kind of goes ballistic and she tells the operator that Ashley had left a note. Okay. So police arrive with the ambulance. And one of the detectives who had worked David's case was also there for Ashley.
Okay.
She ends up with the typed note, like it got handed to her from another officer. But it's not just a suicide note, it's a confession. It's a confessional note. It's 750 words. It's all typed, including the signature at the bottom. Some of the things were said, Mommy, remember, I love you more than anything. I did it for you. Forgive us. Please forgive me. Please don't hate me. Remember, I love you. And it just goes on and on and on. I have a copy of the full letter, but it's pretty long. So we're going to skip that, but if you want to read the whole thing, it's on the website. She also says in this letter, this note, that she killed her dad and she killed her stepdad. And so now that the police are closing in, she's going to kill herself. Remember, Ashley was only like 11 or 12 when her dad died, and 17 when her stepdad died. It's possible. I mean, we see in the news all the time that young kids are killing people, but it's just not as likely. So, Ashley gets taken to the hospital. She almost didn't make it. If Bree had not found her when she did, Ashley would have died. There's no doubt about it. But Ashley didn't die. Mm. As Ashley gained consciousness, a detective was there to ask questions. The first thing that was asked was, did you try to kill yourself? She said, absolutely not. He asked if she left a note, and she said, quote, what note? I don't know what you're talking about, end quote. So she's just coming out of this whatever, you know, pill and alcohol-induced attempt. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't even say, yes, I left a note, because you're not thinking clearly. So the chances of you telling the truth are going to be pretty high at that point.
Absolutely.
And she says, what note? So the detective who talked to Ashley decided to give a copy of the suicide note to Detective Spinelli. Remember the inspector, or the, you know, the investigator for David Castor's death, who discovered that Michael Wallace was also, you know, died by homicide. And as he was reading this note, something jumped right out at him. He's been, you know, involved in this case for 2 years now. So let me read you a section of this note. It says, "When you read the letter, just remember I love you, and everything I did is because I love you. I'm sorry all of this is happening to you, but now everyone is going to know what really happened. And they know it wasn't you, it was me. None, it was supposed to be no one, was ever supposed to know about Daddy. I told you when Daddy died it was all my fault, and it was Daddy was doing things you never knew about. He was drinking when he was at Pick and Pull House and at Lisa's house. He was smoking pot again, too. I saw him. He was mean to you and me, and he only ever loved Bree. I couldn't let him do those things to you anymore. You'd think I don't remember how things were, but I do. And I didn't want to ever live like that anymore. It wasn't fair to you or me. Daddy wasn't going to be good to you or be ever only Bree. I couldn't stand it anymore. The cops said there was antifreeze in Daddy's body, but they did tell anyone about the rat poison too. When I got home from school that day, I knew I was going on Daddy was barely breathing. And I knew he was gonna die. That's why I didn't call you for help or anyone else. I wanted to make sure he couldn't be mean to you or me anymore. He died before I went to pick up Bree from school. I watched him and I knew." Did you hear it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there are plenty of spelling and grammar mistakes here, but that's not the most important part in the language. It's not the most important language clue here. It does come up in the trial later, but it's not. I'll narrow it down a little. "I couldn't stand it anymore. The cops said there was antifreeze in Daddy's body." What do you call the stuff that you put in a radiator?
Antifreeze.
Antifreeze. I call it antifreeze. You call it, say it again?
Antifreeze.
My mother calls it antifreeze. I've asked several people, and nobody I have talked to calls it antifreeze. Or anti-free. They call it, nobody calls it anti-free. But Stacey Castor called it anti-free in her interview with Detective Spinelli. You remember?
I do.
Okay. So this was unusual enough. This phrase was unusual enough to send Detective Spinelli on a warpath.
Absolutely.
So they really wanted to keep Stacy away from Ashley, because at this point they think that maybe Stacy had something to do with Ashley's, supposed attempted suicide. But there was a brief moment where she was able to see Ashley in the hospital. The police were right there. They were standing next to everybody. And Stacy said she only had a chance to tell Ashley she loved her. WTF for me. She tried to kill her own daughter and frame her for two murders. And then she stands by her daughter's hospital bed and says, "I love you."
I mean, it may be true.
Sure. Psychopath that she is, it may be true. Stacy leaves the room, but she doesn't leave the hospital. So after contacting all of the necessary parties that, they need to get the paperwork, the police arrest Stacy Castor outside the hospital doors where she was smoking a cigarette. She was arrested for the death of her husband, David Castor, and the attempted murder of her daughter, Ashley Wallace. All right. So how did it all end? Stacy was adamant that she was innocent and that Ashley was the one that was guilty. As much as she hated to admit it, she said her daughter was a murderer. Detective Spinelli did not buy any of this, right?
Okay.
Because supposedly Ashley had written this suicide note. But Ashley doesn't call antifreeze antifreeze. She calls it antifreeze, like a normal person. So Stacy, they believe, wrote that suicide / confession note. This is why she got arrested. All by itself. Okay. So Stacy says, "It's not me. I don't know where I went wrong, but Ashley's a murderer." Stacy's mom, Ashley's grandmother, even sided with Stacy against her own granddaughter. And it's just such a crappy situation all the way around, right? There was a 4-week trial, and there was a ton of physical evidence and a ton of forensic evidence. So the physical evidence included, the fingerprints, right? That was on the bottom of the green liquid that was only Stacy Castor's. That green liquid was
antifreeze.
Yes, it was, right? So, and that antifreeze is what killed David. There were only Stacy's, there were only Stacy and Ashley's prints, or there were only Stacy's prints around, anywhere around David. There were none of Ashley's prints around David at all. So it would have been next to impossible for her to leave just her mom's prints and David's prints in that room, but not leave any of hers if she was ever there. There was computer evidence that showed that there were several drafts of the supposed suicide confession note on Stacy's computer. There are time-stamped, so when police checked it out, they were able to prove that Ashley was in school when these were written. And there's no possible way that Ashley could have written that note on the computer. And there were no drafts of any type of suicide letter or a confession on Ashley's computer. All right, and then finally, there was a full-on forensic linguistic analysis that involved not just the suicide confession letter, but other writing samples. So they found a plethora, a ton of Ashley's and Stacy's other writing samples, and they compared it with the suicide note. The expert linguists looked closely at the words that were used, how they were spelled, how if they were spelled correctly or incorrectly. He compared each writing sample with the suicide note. They looked at the phrasing. They looked at the sentence structure. They looked at vocabulary choice. Because, you know, that's what we're looking at. A forensic psychiatrist named Dr. James Knoll also looked over this note. And he said that most suicide notes discuss remorse and how the person just can't deal with life anymore. But Dr. Knoll said that in this note, the focus was all on Ashley's confession of guilt. In fact, it was repeated 14 times in these 750 words.
Wow.
So through this whole analysis, they were able to prove that Ashley did not write this suicide confession letter. Stacy did. Primarily because of her own idiolect. It showed up in the confession, and she used the same words in her interviews.
Makes sense.
So on February 5th, 2009, Stacy Castor was found guilty of second-degree murder of David Castor and attempted second-degree murder of her daughter, Ashley. She was never charged for the death of Michael Wallace. But her husband, well, Michael Wallace, her first husband, played a huge part in connecting all the dots for the detectives and making sure that she did at least find some prison time. So she was sentenced to 51 years in prison before she would even have the option of parole. And since she was 42 years at the time of sentencing, it was essentially a death sentence. They didn't realize how quickly that would come, though. On June 11th, 2016, just 7 years into her sentence, the Black Widow was found dead in her cell. Ironically, she died of a heart attack, as proven by the autopsy.
Wow.
No, there were no antifreeze crystals in her body. So Sister Bree Wallace has always supported her sister, and like Ashley, Bree decided to not have any contact with their mother after the murder attempt of Ashley. And while there's very little information about where the girls are now, Ashley is said to be in New York and engaged or married. And she said, quote, "As hard as it is to get up every day and put a smile on my face, I know that I have to, because if I don't, then Stacy won," end quote. And Stacy most certainly did not win.
Wow.
Yeah. So what do you think?
Antifreeze. Something so, I meant.
So tiny, right? Such a small little thing.
But like you said, right, the idiosyncrasy of, like, the your own little trademark.
Idiolect.
Crazy.
I'm not calling you a word.
I was going to say.
Idiolect. So, that's it. That's our case for today. So, head on over to our website at www.wordstokillby.com to see all of our resources and photos from this case. And then after that, stop by our Instagram or Facebook pages and let us know what you think of the Black Widow. And then also, tell me, how do you pronounce the stuff that goes in radiators? Because I really want to know. At this point, I'm just kind of making it into a full-on research project. And while there are a ton of cases out there with language evidence, I'd love some suggestions from our listeners. Do you know of any story that is dying to be told? Get it? Dying to be told. That has language evidence. So if so, send it our way. And that's it. So until next time, remember, words matter. So choose yours carefully.